Ed Elchester edits the Pitt Poetry Series, and he is the general editor of the Drew Hines Literature Prize for Short Fiction. Both are branches of the University of Pittsburgh Press. From 1978 to 98, he was director of the writing program at the University of Pittsburgh and was twice elected president of Associated Writing Programs. He co-edits the poetry magazine 5 AM and lives in a rural county northeast of Pittsburgh. Elchester is a guru in all matters of poetry and publishing, and he is a pillar in American literature. Ed Elchester, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Okay, thank you.
We know that you've been the, the head honcho there there at the University of Pittsburgh Press for, what, going on 30-plus years now?
It's about that, yeah. And I'm not actually the head honcho. We have a press director, but I have been the poetry editor for a long time.
How does one maintain that kind of stamina in the literary world?
I'm not sure one does all the time, you know. But it's something I've always really enjoyed doing. And one of the reasons that I took early retirement from the English department at Pitt a long time ago was to concentrate on my own writing and to concentrate on the work that I do with the press.
Right.
And it's actually, I mean, it's time consuming, but it's not that awful. I have readers for our first book contest, so I don't have to deal with a huge number of manuscripts from that. I usually make the decision on the basis of 10 or 12 finalist manuscripts that come through.
That's
and
good.
Other than that, we get between 150 and 200 manuscripts from published poets a year. And that takes a fair amount of reading, a fair amount of work, but
sure.
On the other hand, it's manageable. It's compared to what people do at trade houses.
Right.
It's a rather light load, as a matter of fact.
About how many books do you guys publish a year?
Right now, we're up to 14 a year.
Wow, that's
which
nice.
Is a lot. When we got a new director a couple of years ago, he was looking at the results of the poetry series, and he asked me if he thought we could do more and still keep up the quality, and I said, yeah, we can move it up, you know, one each season to 14.
Right.
And I don't think I'd like to do more than that, but that is a lot of books.
That is,
it's more than most poetry series
definitely.
At either trade houses or university presses or small presses do.
And, you know, how much has publishing, I bet you've been able to sort of see the trajectory of how, you know, publishing has sort of changed and evolved throughout the years. Can you give us some insight on that, how the publishing industry has changed since you first got there at the
Pit? Well, it's hard to say. I mean, in general, what I would say is that trade publishing has become more and more commercial. There are obviously very few places now that publish poetry.
Right.
Very few places that will publish short fiction. Except by established authors.
Sure.
So more and more, it's independent presses and university presses that are carrying that. And one of the things that's interesting to me is that in general, we started doing about four books a year many years ago, and that's gradually grown. Our sales have grown over the years with it.
Right.
So that we, along with other university presses and small presses, have been picking up the slack. But on the other hand, what is true is that, for the most part, trade houses will overwhelmingly do books that they think have commercial value. In some cases, those are great books. In most cases, I think they're not.
Right,
But that's how it goes, and is that way now. It had not been that way 30 or 40 years ago, when places like Knopf and Random House and Athenaeum and so on were actually not only doing poetry and fiction, but also nonfiction, which was interesting, but which wouldn't have a big sale.
Right, yeah.
But that's less and less true.
Right. Yeah, it seems that, at least in my experience, in my limited publishing experience, that, you know, publishers are unwilling to take risk, you know, as much as they were even just 10 years ago. And it's really kind of for poetry and even sort of more maybe even experimental works, you see independent publishers emerging or even university presses taking some of that on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a part of the reason for that, it's not an evil conspiracy, it may be slightly evil, the reason for that is that publishing has consolidated, and you have a couple of huge firms which are doing it, and consequently you don't have a nice independent Knopf, let's say, where editors are encouraged to take some chances and to do some books that may not be commercial. It's just the opposite right now, it seems, in which the directive from the top is don't lose money.
Right.
The only thing I would say about our operation is that the poetry series now makes a little bit of money for the press.
Good.
And that's one of the reasons that our new director wanted to expand a bit. And it is marvelous to be able to publish without having to worry about getting grants
sure.
from outside.
I bet.
And that's one of the reasons that I enjoy staying on. You know, we don't
sure.
have financial problems. We just have the yeah. business of trying to do as much stuff that is really good
right.
as we possibly can.
Yeah, and I imagine that, you know, this sort of new, I think this new direction, or at least this trend of, you know, less risk-taking in publishing, it makes it difficult probably for a lot of, I'd know, it makes it difficult for a lot of emerging or newer writers to even launch a career, you know. And I know that the University of Pittsburgh Press, or especially the poetry series, you know, it's really helped launch the career of many writers that we all know and love today.
That's true.
Right.
You know, I was just, before you called, I was just making a list of people who, at least within poetry, are relatively well-known,
right.
a number of whom we've published. That includes Sharon Olds,
right.
Larry Leavis, Etheridge Knight,
yep.
Alicia Ostreicher, Richard Blanco,
right.
most recently,
yep.
Denise Duhamel.
Yep.
We also, of course, published the major books of Billy Collins, and lately had this book by Ross Gay, which was this year one of the five finalists.
Oh, for the American Book Award, right.
Yeah, so I don't know. The business has been going on for some time with us, and we will do most books, or most of the books that we do, are by relatively young people.
Right.
But we try to keep a number of older authors with us. Occasionally,
right.
we will attract work from established authors from outside. We do a book by Robert Bly
right.
that he wanted to have reprinted with us. He didn't like his previous publisher.
Which book is that?
This is Leaping Poetry, which
oh,
is
yeah.
a wonderful
classic.
Small book which illustrates a lot of his theories about poetry and which has been very influential.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
it's already, we did it a couple of years ago, and it's already, I think, in a third printing.
One of my other favorite authors, too, Lorna Di Cervantes, you guys first published as well, is that right?
Oh, yes. yeah. And that book also keeps selling. We lately, I don't have the figures in front of me, I don't know, but we sell much more than a handful of that every year.
Right, yeah.
And
that.
It's interesting, with Lorna, with Sharon Olds, with Leavis, with Etheridge Knight, the books will sell in any given year, each one of them, 200 or 600 or 700, depending on the year, depending
wow.
on the winds of
right.
taste. So that is pretty good, because some of those books go back
yeah.
25 or 30 years.
Yeah, I read somewhere that you guys do pretty good in terms of selling the poetry, you know, getting it out there.
Yeah. We're getting better, and I think we are reasonably good so far as that goes.
Right.
The sales for us in poetry, as well as other things, have, as they have, of course, the whole publishing industry, have been down a bit in the last couple of years. But last year, the poetry series sold approximately $400,000 at wholesale.
Wow.
Which is $700,000 at retail, which is not much for, let's say, an automobile company, but it's pretty damn good for publishers of poetry.
Right.
So we feel
Absolutely.
Good with that.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Ross Gay a little bit earlier, and was his book, was it nominated or was it a finalist for the National Book Award or the American
National
Book Award?
Award
National
yeah.
Book Award, that's
it's
right.
It's a book called Catalog of Unabashed Gratitude.
Wonderful, yeah, I love his poetry. It's great
and
poetry.
It's really a great read.
Yeah.
One of the things that I am happy with the series is that I think my taste is fairly broad. We do
mm-hmm.
books from all over the map, all kinds of things,
right.
all kinds of styles. But one of the things that always pleases me is if I run across a manuscript that's really good, that also is readable, you know, and
sure.
need a person to work at it or be a specialist.
Right.
And Ross's book is like that. You can read the thing, and someone said in a review, you read this book, and it makes you smile at the end, and you're happy you read it. And I was thinking, holy
yeah.
cow, you don't get many books of poetry in which somebody may say that. You
that's
know?
Right. That's
I think
right.
That's a great thing to have said about it.
And so he's one of the authors, obviously, that's just made waves recently. But, you know, also Richard Blanco is another one that, as I understand it, he got his start with your guys' is it the Agnes Lynch Sarriette Poetry Prize? Is that how it started?
Yes, that's how that started.
Right. In 1997, Richard, right? His book was selected?
The latest book book is Looking for the Gulf Motel,
mm-hmm.
and that's a new book. It's not a selected. Richard has not had a selected poems yet. But on the other hand, Looking for the Gulf Motel was the book that was published when he was asked to be the poet at the inauguration.
Oh, okay.
The second time around for Obama.
Right.
And since that time, Richard has also been doing a lot of great things.
He, yeah.
Most recently was invited to write a poem and read it for the opening of the American consulate or the American embassy in Havana.
Oh, that's right. I heard about that in Cuba, yeah.
And he did that. He just seems to keep going with these things.
Yeah.
And he was a couple of weeks ago, well, actually about a month ago, he was in Pittsburgh doing a reading at one of the local colleges. And it was nice to see that he was in an auditorium that held about 300 people, and it was just about full.
Nice.
And people were lined up, half an hour, three quarters of an hour afterward to buy his books and get them autographed, you know. And he was, he's just become a kind of rock star in poetry right now. And he's also a great guy. He's a very nice human being.
For those who don't know, the listeners that aren't familiar maybe with Richard Blanco, he was the poet who was selected by President Obama to deliver the inaugural poem back in January of 2013, I believe. And, and his first book with you guys was The City of 100 Fires. Is that correct? How did you all feel there at the press when you found out about his new role as the inaugural poet?
the first thing that the staff said, oh, wow, this is so nice because it's the press being recognized or one of our authors being recognized. And I must say the first thing that I felt is, well, this is great for Richard. It also will help book sales a lot.
Yeah, no kidding.
which it did. But I don't know. One of the things that I would say is that when I became the editor of the press, it was in 1978, which is almost in the Middle Ages. But at that time, the poetry series did a few books a year. Nearly all of our poets were white heterosexual males, and I love white heterosexual males since I'm one, more or less. But on the other hand, one of the things I wanted to do, and it was not being done at the time, is simply to get more people who represented the country, on the list. I was one of the first people, I think, or the first editor of the poetry series that almost immediately started to publish an equal number of women with men.
Right,
And blah, blah, blah. We just added a lot of people who are interesting. And there's never been, in my mind, any kind of push to publish an inferior manuscript. But we got lots of manuscripts from black writers, from Chicano writers, various other minorities, lots of manuscripts from women, which were terrific. And we tried to do as many of those as possible. And it's the same thing with Richard. When that came through, The City of 100 Fires, it stood out by a long way from other of the first books that we got. It was clearly ought to have been a winner of that prize. Right. And it gives me a great deal of pleasure that we've come along in this way, that we really are representative, it seems to me, to a much greater degree.
I would agree. Absolutely.
Than we used to be of what's happening in the country.
We're speaking with longtime poet and publisher Ed Ochester, who's there in Pittsburgh. And we're just talking about all things poetry and literary. And I recently read an article, Ed, I think it was in Best American Poetry, probably a few years back, where you talked about as an editor, making sort of these eclectic choices and how American poetry is bigger than just one or two schools of thought. And it sounds like, obviously this focus on diversity or at least this intention towards publishing writers that represent America or at least the landscape of us here in the United States, has been something that you all have been working really sort of diligently at for so long now, and it shows in your list of all the poets that you have. That's fantastic.
Well, I'm very happy with it, and I think one of the things to say is that the difficult business is that whenever you publish anything that looks new, the major review sources or major reviewers, they tend not to get reviewed because, again, they don't look safe. They haven't been vetted. And so it takes a while for things to grow.
Right.
And I remember when we published Etheridge Knight, Selected Poems, this goes way back into the last century, too, that he did not get a lot of notice in places like the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, what have you. He simply wasn't reviewed there.
Sure.
But if you speak to anybody now who knows anything about American poetry, what they will tell you is, well, Etheridge Knight was one of the great black poets from the last century. He was extremely influential. I talked to Terence Hayes on occasion about this, and it's amazing to me how faithful Terence is to Etheridge's memory and how many other people are. So what this involves, I think, and one of the reasons that I feel good about the series is that often the people we'll publish, who I think are amazingly powerful as writers, won't be recognized by readership in general for a number of years, but they have been.
Right.
You know? One other person, this happens to be a white heterosexual male, but it's Billy Collins.
We
published three of his books, which encompass, I think, the best of Billy's work. And somehow, and inside of a couple of years, he became one of the best-known poets of the United States.
Right.
He did move on to Random House, not because he hated Pittsburgh, but because they made a huge monetary offer, which we were not prepared to meet. But on the other hand, that also was an example of someone who wasn't known outside of poetry circles until we had published his book.
Incredible.
That's one of the things that's absolutely terrific. If one can do that, and one's own sales, the series sales are perfectly good, you just have to wait a little bit longer than you might at one of the major New York houses to get recognition.
You know, you talked about Etheridge Knight a little bit ago, and I had the, for the listeners, I had the privilege of studying with you, Ed, there at Bennington College writing seminars several years ago. And I remember this anecdote that you had told us there about, and I think it was Etheridge Knight, actually, where you said, I think he planned it, he's organized his own wake. Was that right?
Yes. what happened at the time, I had known Etheridge for a number of years because he had lived in Pittsburgh at one point. And he liked to come back, and I forget where I met him for the first time, but we sponsored, in the English department and other places in town that did poetry readings, sponsored him, it must have been at least a half dozen times in the last few years of his life, for readings in Pittsburgh. So I got to know him that way. My story, I think, was that Etheridge really depended on sales of his books and doing readings. And at one point, he had been publishing with Houghton Mifflin, which had done a selective poems, and Houghton Mifflin decided to let his book go out of print. And that happens, of course, but it was a particularly difficult thing for Etheridge because he made his living by selling his books. And if you didn't have books to sell, it was pretty grim. So I, when I heard this news, I called him and said, well, I think this is a pretty bad thing to have happened. Why don't we do selected poems at Pittsburgh, which he was happy to do. We talked about it. The only problem is it took Houghton Mifflin about 3 or 4 years to release the rights to the book that wasn't going to reprint. So it was difficult for him, but for Etheridge. But at last, the book finally got back in print, and he was happy with it. And it happened a few years before he passed away. One story about Etheridge, by the way, which is very interesting, is that he had a number of major diseases, and he was told by his doctors that he had less than a year to live. And it was characteristic of him that he decided that rather than to just waste away, he would have a wake for himself before he died. The story that I love to tell about this is that it was in Indianapolis. I went out for the wake, and when I got through the door, there were a lot of people there already. His sisters were supervising a barbecue with a roasted pig and so on. And Etheridge came toward me with a half bottle of gin and said, you know, the doctor said I can't drink no more because I'll get sick. He said, I am sick. I'm going to die. So I thinking, what the hell? I'll do a little bit of drinking. And so we finished the half bottle of gin right there at that time. And it was kind of nice. It was also true that at that moment, Etheridge, or at that place, Etheridge also had his pastor, who was the leader of a large black church in Indianapolis, do his eulogy.
While he was there.
I was sitting next to Etheridge in the front row before the pastor started, And he just went on talking about how this was a great good man who took care of the youth of this area, who helped keep them off the streets by teaching them how to write. And every now and then I look out of my left eye, and absolutely, he was just smiling like at the eulogy that he was being delivered. So the whole thing was just nice. And as bizarre as that is, that represents to me the spirit of this guy and the spirit of many of his poems.
Right.
You know, a little bit off-center, a little
wacky, absolutely,
but very human and very nice.
Yeah, I would expect that exactly. That's a fantastic story. I remember you telling us that there at Bennington. You know, you yourself, you just came out with a collection of poetry, Sugar Run Road?
Yes.
How's that been received?
It seems to be doing pretty well. I've been doing some readings out of it, and I'm not sure what the latest sales have been, but apparently they're doing well at Autumn House Press, for Autumn House Press. So I'm happy with it. I've been doing a lot of writing recently.
Good.
And I do think that Sugar Run Road, which is the name of the book that was published in January, does have some of my best stuff in it. So I recommend anybody who's interested to take a look at that. You can get it through Amazon as well as local bookstores.
Absolutely. And you know, I was really a big fan, too, of your previous collection. I think it was your previous collection, Unreconstructed.
That was a selected.
Right,
and
yeah.
That still is out, too.
That was also by, both those books are by Autumn House Press, is that right?
Yes.
And also 5 a.m., the literary journal that you and Judith Vollmer were publishing, is that still going on?
No, we did that. This was Judith Vollmer and myself had edited a magazine, 5 a.m. We started in the middle of the 80s, and about 5 years ago, we were talking about aches and pains and how much work we had, and we decided that we had done our work, we had done our job with the magazine for a number of years. We really enjoyed it, but we really had to stop, and so we did. We looked around, we advertised to see if anybody would like to take it over and still keep it going in the way that it had been going. A lot of people said they would like to, but they couldn't. They didn't have enough time. So it expired a pretty quiet death, I think. We had a celebration in Pittsburgh for the last issue, and that was in an overflow hall in the middle of the city, and everybody said they were sad. But on the other hand, we were happy to finally get out from under that.
I bet, yeah. You have a lot going on, though, so you have a lot on your plate, you know?
A lot of stuff. And what I would say is that the amount of work that I do at the University Press is much less than the amount of work that the magazine took. Because we were responsible, the two of us were doing everything in terms of editing, in terms of proofreading, in terms of manufacturing the magazine, in terms of trying to get funding for the thing.
Sure, I bet, yeah.
And all of that is just an enormous amount of effort. And again, it's one of those things that I think that a lot of people enjoy, if they're poets or they're fiction writers. But we carried it on for longer, for about 25 years, than those magazines usually go. That was one of the things that people said when we sent out a notice. Well, you've been doing this for a hell of a long time. And in fact, we had.
Well, we have been speaking with poet and editor at the University of Pittsburgh Press, Ed Alchester, about all things literary. Ed, before you leave us, can we ask you to share a poem for our poem of the week?
Sure. Let me see. You have anything in mind? Or
No, it'd be your choice.
Okay, this is from the new book, Sugar Run Road, and it's a poem called Poetry, which
Beautiful.
Has been reprinted in a couple of places, including the Poetry Society of America website. It's called Poetry. I too dislike it, the mystified truisms, the dusty puzzle prunes, the theatrical exaggerations, the brutal crescendo of woodworms. And yet, I think of O'Hara's delight in the endless pleasures of quotidian life, and Duhamel throwing a dozen balls in the air and juggling them all. Frank said, only a few poems are as good as the movies. But that was a long time ago, before a lot of bad movies, before background music, before there was almost no silence, and the private life is an insult to others. Poetry is the most private art. Li Yang remembering his father combing his mother's hair, Stern and Gilbert with their mouths open walking down a street in Paris, Judith writing the mysteries of Level Green and her father's radioactive chambers, Catullus registering his private ecstasies and fears while the machine of the state ground on. Cannell saying, go so deep into yourself, you speak for everyone.
Wonderful. And that was Ed Ochester reading from his new collection of poetry, Sugar Run Road. Ed, thank you so much for joining us here on Words on a Wire.
Well, thank you so much.